You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
So we're starting a brand new series today called Spiral Bound, and we're going to be looking at the book of Judges over the next few weeks. And as Nikki already mentioned, I'm leaving, like my vacation, I guess, begins in, 35 minutes or something like that. I don't know. But the elders are going to be filling in over the next few weeks. And I've said this so many times, and it's not just to be polite. They are some of my favorite teachers. They have such incredible things to say, and God is using them in incredible ways. So, and I'm just saying, if this is your first time, like if MC3 is your first church experience, like, you don't get that kind of quality in many churches. It's like, and I'm not going to say something about myself here, but, the pastor's not there. It's time to kind of, watch someone else or listen online to something. Hey, these guys are incredible, so I'm excited about that. So we're starting the series, and today I'm going to introduce the book of Judges. And can we have the house lights on so I can actually leave them off because I'm showing a clip. Sorry, hold on. I'm excited. But we're going to be looking at these judges. Today I'm introducing the whole book and what you're going to be seeing. And actually, just for the record, to give you full disclosure ahead of time, what you're going to hear this morning, you have already heard before. You will have heard this 2 months ago during our The Story series, and you will have heard this previously also in the Word series that we did when we were talking about an overview of the Bible. And so we're going to be looking specifically at what Judges is, the pattern you're going to see, and we're going to dive a little bit deeper into that today. But I don't know what life is like for you in terms of people that are annoying. Maybe I'm like, yeah, people are annoying. And everybody's like, yes, it's you, Sean. You are the annoying person in my life. But I don't know what your patience level is. I know that my patience level with annoying people or people that don't listen, like, it's definitely lower. My tolerance is lower. You know, if you say something to somebody and I guess this happens with kids because, some kids don't obey like instantly every time you say something. Maybe that's just my experience. Maybe all of your kids do. But, you kind of hit this spot where you're like, okay, enough. I'm tired of dealing with your annoyance or your stupidity or your disobedience or your ignorance. And we just kind of give up. And I think there's a spot in our lives where you, and I'm sure if we sat around and we're like, hey, tell the story about that time, about that annoying person. And maybe you couldn't tell that story because the person you'd be telling it to is that person. But just that kind of like, yeah, oh, this happened, then it happened again. I'm like, look, I'm done. All right. So I want to show a clip from a movie that came out a while ago, a long time ago. So at least around 20 years ago, 21 years ago. It's from a movie called Notting Hill. And the movie, it's got this plot. And we're not going to talk about the plot. But in this particular scene, Hugh Grant, a young, dashing British fellow that you'll see now, he's like old now. But in this scene, he is a manager of a travel book shop. And that's important. You'll see that as the scene starts. But just to understand that it is a book or a store that sells travel books, books about travel. Because if you don't pick that up in that first little blip of the scene, the rest of it doesn't make sense. So go ahead and watch this quick clip.
Do you have any books by Dickens?
No, I'm afraid we're a travel bookshop. We only sell travel books.
Oh, right. How about the new John Grisham thriller?
Well, no, because that's a novel too, isn't it?
Oh, right. Have you got Winnie the Pooh?
Martin, your customer.
Can I help you?
So how often have you had that kind of moment where you're with someone and you're just like, hey, it's your customer. I'm done. I'm done dealing with this. And I think it happens many times. And, of course, there's times where maybe more often I would suspect that we want to say, your customer, I'm done. But, of course, we can't because, we're mature or we'll get fired if we do that or something like that. But I think this idea is deeply rooted in us, being frustrated and tired of someone not paying attention, not listening. And we're like, look, I've given you so many shots. I'm done. And just be like, sorry, it's your customer, somebody else. And as we go through this this series this month, we're going to see this 2 months, we're going to see that God does not operate that way. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Because if God was anything like us, he would totally have given up on us. He would have been done with us. And been like, you know, Satan, your customer, you can have him because I'm done. I'm tired of these people. And today I have the longest point ever in the history of the point. We have been doing, you know, we've been doing this for almost 10 years or 9 years and I don't know how many hundreds of different points. But the point today is this. But it's important. That's why it's really long. They won't be this long the rest of the month. But the point is that just like God showed his continuous compassion through the judges, God will show his compassion to us every day. And again, very long statement, but this is what I want us to get, that God continuously showed his compassion during the time of the judges, through the judges, and he will do the same and does do the same for us every day. And this is so important because, again, if we look at God the way we see life, we mess up. We miss it because God is not as impatient, as disappointed. Disappointed maybe not be the best word because he does get disappointed. But God isn't as intolerant maybe as we are. He doesn't say, okay, that's it, I've had enough. You've screwed up too many times. I've told you to do this, you didn't. I told you to do it, you didn't. I told you, I'm done. Satan, your customer. Somebody else take this person because I don't want him anymore. But God does not do that. And we're going to see that throughout this series of the compassion that God demonstrates through the judges. Now I think I'm ready to hit the house light so everybody is not this shadow. Great. So, and I just want to look at this. We're going to look at this passage, and it's kind of a lengthy setup, and so we're going to do some flying on the computer, so I hope your clicking finger is ready. But this whole thing, as we look at this story, if you or I were God in this story, I think we would say, your customer, I'm done. No, I'm sorry. This is a travel bookshop, and you keep disobeying, so I'm done. Your customer. And so when we would say your customer, and that's what I want to look at here in this section. So the first thing there is we're going to look at just a quick backstory. With that, there we go. When we would say your customer, I want to look at the backstory real quick, and we're going to kind of fly through here. This is in Judges chapter 2, and just for the record, the book of Judges isn't necessarily the easiest book to read chronologically. It does a little bit of jumping, and every once in a while, the author will throw a story in there, like, oh, by the way, this happened too. And if you read through, we're going to cover in this series the 16 judges, eight major judges and eight minor judges. This isn't even in the notes. The major judges, and we talked about this during the story series, major judges meant there was more written about them. Minor judges, as you'll see, we're going to cover them in a day because there wasn't much written about them, right? One, two, yeah, that's right. These judges, there's 16 of them in the book of Judges, but there's some other stories in there, but they're not judges specifically, and so we're not going to talk about them. And I need to say this one more very important thing. A judge, in our context here, was a leader. That's what a judge was. It did not mean they were behind a big bench with a gavel and a robe. And, you know, if you're British, they had the hair thing, the wig thing going on. It meant that they were a leader. They were the ones that determined what was right and wrong. So in that sense, they were judges. And we will see later that there actually was a judge that actually was a judge. But in general, when we talk about judges, it just meant a leader. And so in this spot, just some quick backstory in Judges chapter 2, we're picking up there because one is kind of another story, too, that you can read on your own. But here's what we said. The angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim and said to the Israelites, I brought you out of Egypt into this land that I swore to give your ancestors. And I said that I would never break my covenant with you. For your part, you were not to make any covenants with the people living in this land. Instead, you were to destroy their altars, but you disobeyed my command. Why did you do this? So now I declare that I will no longer drive out the people living in your land. They will be thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a constant temptation to you. And that word constant temptation, that phrase, it actually means a snare, a trap. Like anytime you walk, they're going to keep catching you up and pulling you back. And so as we continue here in verses through this passage, it says, when the angel of the Lord finished speaking to all the Israelites, the people wept loudly. So they called the place Bochim, which means weeping. And they and they offered sacrifices there to the Lord. So the angel of the Lord, basically this person, this angel speaking on behalf of God, or in fact may have been God, depending on how you look at the Hebrew there, said, you people were told to go into this promised land, and when you went into the land, you were to destroy the altars of all these pagan shrines, get rid of all the idols, and drive out the people of the land. Because this is your promised land. If you leave them in the land, they're going to catch you. They're going to pull you back into sin. And so where we find ourselves historically is that this is after the Exodus. The people have left Egypt and they wandered in the desert for 40 years. And again, you can check out the story series and pick up that whole concept of the way it works. It's on mc3church.org/the story. But they had wandered through the desert for 40 years because of their disobedience. Moses dies. Joshua is now in control. And Joshua leads them into the land. The book of Joshua is all about the conquest of this land that God had promised to the people. And so Judges picks up, as you'll see in this next verse, immediately at that moment. The people had moved into the land. They didn't fully obey, as God just said. They didn't drive out the foreign nations. They did not remove their idols and their altars. And so that's where they find themselves. And God says, okay, you didn't do that, then I'm not going to help you. You didn't obey me, I'm not going to keep, I'm not going to do this for you. They're going to become a trap. You disobeyed, it's going to cost you. There are consequences for your sin. And so now, picking up at the next verse, it says, after Joshua sent the people away, each of the tribes to take possession of the land allotted to them, and the Israelites served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and the leaders who outlived him, those who had seen all the great things the Lord had done for Israel. Joshua, son of Nun, N-U-N, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. They buried him in the land he had been allocated at Timnath-Serach, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. So that's where he was buried, in Gaash. But here's the deal. Joshua is dead. The people moved into the land. They didn't drive out everyone. They're settling in their land now that God had promised them, the promised land promised to Abraham back in Genesis chapter 12. And again, the story tells you all that, how that all fits together. And Joshua is now dead. He was the great leader that, of course, when it was time to go into the land, he said, we can do this. He was one of the spies. Everybody else said, no. And Joshua said, no, we can. He and Caleb said that we could do it. So this is where we are, picking up this story. So that's the backstory of what Judges is all about, where Judges picks up. And the book of Judges covers a span of 400 years. So we're going to be talking about 400 years of Judges. And I should also clarify that we are not going to be teaching this chronologically. So each of the elders kind of chose a judge, and just because they're the next person to teach doesn't necessarily mean that they're the next judge in the story. And again, like I said, I'm going to be doing the minor judges all in one shot, and their stories are spattered throughout. So that's the backstory. Okay, so far, we get it. But now is really this moment where God's compassion, his continuous compassion, starts to show through. Where the guy in the bookshop could continue to throw out names of other books that are not travel books, and God would continuously say, well, that's not a travel book either. Well, that's not a travel book either. Where you and I would be like, that's it, it's your customer, I'm done. So that's where we get into this spiral. And the series is called Spiral Bound, this idea of being stuck in a spiral, in a twist. And again, this is going to be review-ish from the story and from the word series. But the first part of this spiral, and again, it's a spiral, it's a twist, it's a loop. It's going to keep going and going and going. And we're going to see that this is going to go for all 16 judges. And so the first part of the spiral is what I'm calling rebellion. In Ignition, your kids are learning the similar things. And they might have slightly different names for this pattern, but I like, all of my names to rhyme together and or to be alliterated, and because that's me. So rebellion. So in Judges 2:10, we see the first piece of this spiral, of this beginning of spiral into sin. And in Judges 2:10-12, this is what it says. After that generation died. So now Joshua and everyone that knew what God did during Joshua, during the Exodus, during the wandering, during the conquering, they're gone. And another generation grew up who did not acknowledge the Lord or remember the mighty things he had done for Israel. And this phrase, acknowledge the Lord, doesn't mean like they didn't know mentally about him. It's that they were like, that was my dad's thing. That was my grandpa's thing. That's not my thing, the God thing. Nah, so they just didn't really follow him that way. And of course, they weren't around when some of those miraculous things happened, when they walked around the walls of Jericho and it came down and they crossed the Jordan River. They were not around for that. And so it goes on and says, the Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight and served the images of Baal. They abandoned the Lord, the God of their ancestors who had brought them out of Egypt. They went after other gods, worshiping the gods of the people around them. And so here, exactly what God said was going to happen to Joshua at the end, near the end of his life. You know, these gods, these other idols are going to pull the people away from me. And that's exactly what happened. And so it started this part of the cycle, which was rebellion, that the people turned against God. And then after this rebellion, there's what we're calling retribution. This is probably the most awkward word, but it begins with R. Alicia is one of the helpers teaching in the preschool today. And I don't think your kids are going to come out from preschool with the word retribution. They probably won't. I pushed her on it and she was like, no. But she's my daughter, by the way, if you don't know that. So retribution is not the best word, but the idea of this is that God says, okay, you're going to rebel, then fine, I'm going to let you kind of fall into your sin. I'm going to let you wallow in this a little bit. I'm going to bring in some of these outside nations and the people that you didn't remove. I'm just going to kind of step back and let you deal with the consequences of your rebellion. And so that's where it's retribution. It's not revenge. Because God isn't about getting revenge. He's not like, ha-ha, I'll get you back. It's God going, you know what? I'm just going to let you move in the direction that you're going. And this is essentially going to be discipline. And that's what discipline is. You know, we get disciplined by our parents. You get put in the corner. You get spanked. Whatever it is. The idea isn't for your parents to go, ha-ha, I'll get you back now. You're going to have to be in the corner. Like, that doesn't accomplish anything. But it's to correct and say, okay, you're suffering now, and hopefully it'll change your attitude. And so that's what it's called, retribution. And then continuing in Judges chapter 2, verse 12, second half of verse 12, it says, they angered the Lord. So because of their rebellion, they angered the Lord. They abandoned the Lord to serve Baal and the images of Ashtoreth. This made the Lord burn with anger against Israel. He's like, I told you, don't do this. My way is the best way for you. But he burned with anger and says, so he handed them over to raiders who stole their possessions. He turned them over to their enemies all around, and they were no longer able to resist them. So God said, fine, if this is what you're going to do, if you're going to disobey, if you're going to want to get caught up with these other gods and these other nations that are not following me, then fine, I'm going to step back and let you deal with the consequences of your sin. And so that's this part called retribution. Where again, it's not God getting revenge, but God just saying, okay, we're gonna let you deal with the consequences of your rebellion. But then the spiral continues into what we call request, or what I'm calling request, where the people cry out to God. The discipline works. The hard thing works, and they go, okay, this is not good. We need God's help. And again, as the elders and I teach the rest of the series, you're going to be able to see this cycle almost every time. Not every piece of the spiral is in every judge, but you're going to be like, oh, there's the retribution. Oh, there's the request. Like, it's written in almost every one of these judges. So there's this request in verse 15 of Judges chapter 2. It says, what does it say? I want to. Yeah. Every time Israel went out to battle, the Lord fought against them. Now, to be clear, it wasn't necessarily that he was like there fighting hot. No, but it was just this idea of they were, as it says, that causing them to be defeated just as he warned. Like, God kind of stepped back and said, fine, we're going to let these sinful other nations have their way. And it says, and the people were in great distress. Now, I need to be clear here. In this verse, this is the next phase of this spiral. As we look at the actual judges, it will say, and the people cried out to God in desperation. And the people were in such distress that they called out to God for help. And so here, it doesn't really build that idea as much. The interesting thing is that the Hebrew word for this phrase, great distress, it means bound. The word means bound. So the people were bound. They were stuck. They were caught in this thing, and they cried out and said, God, this is awful. This is terrible. So they cried out to God. They had this request. So you've got rebellion. Then it leads to God saying, okay, retribution, I'm going to let these nations have their way. And then the people get a little bit tired of the oppression, from these nations, and they request, they cry out to God, God help us, which then leads to this next phase, which is rescue. And this next part of the thing, and this is really what Judges is all about. Because in this rescue phase, this is where the judges step into the story. This is where the judges come into the picture. And again, the judges were just leaders that God raised up, and they were human. Kirk is teaching on Samson. Like, Samson is messed up. Okay? So don't be like, I'm going to emulate and be just like all of the judges. They're going to be my example. Like, good luck with that one with Samson on so many levels. I don't even have a shot. If you know anything about Samson, he was known for his long hair, but that's a separate story. So rescue. So in Judges chapter 2, verse 16, it says, then the Lord raised up judges to rescue the Israelites from their attackers. So God says, okay, fine. I'm going to rescue you. I'm going to bring you out of this. And as you're going to see as we read through this, it's because of God's continuous compassion. God says, I told you not to do this. You disobeyed. Now these people are tripping you up. Now you're rebelling. And then I'm like, fine, you can have your way. Get stuck in your sin. And again, God would be like, your customer, I'm done with these people. But it says when the people cried out, God, help us. This is bad. It seems that when we disobeyed you, it caused problems. God's like, I know. And so God, in his compassion, raised up a judge. And that doesn't mean anything miraculous or out of the grave. He just said, okay, I'm going to allow this judge to rescue the Israelites from their attackers. And there's a little commentary here, as we'll see, we go throughout the series. Yet Israel did not listen to the judges, but prostituted themselves by worshiping other gods. How quickly they turned away from the path of their ancestors who had walked in obedience to the Lord's commands. So you've got this cycle coming back now to this idea of rescue. And again, just in one shot, these people disobey God. They get what they deserve. And they say, God, help us. And God says, okay. And just right there, like if we just stop that cycle. Can you go to the next slide there? If we just stop that cycle right there, like I would totally be like, your customer, I'm done. I've already warned them once. They disobeyed. They got caught in it. I warned them about that disobedience. They got caught in it again. Now I'm just saying, fine, live with the sin. Live with your consequences. And then they cry out for help. I'm like, no. You had your shot. You had your shot multiple times. I'd be done. But God raised up a judge to rescue them. And here's where the compassion gets crazy. God did this 16 times over a span of 400 years. God continued each time this cycle, and it's a cycle, as we'll see in a moment, each time this spiral continued and got deeper and deeper and worse, God never stopped. He never quit. He never gave up. He never said, your customer. His compassion was continuous. And that's something, that same God is our God. And that same compassion is offered to us. But let's continue with the cycle. Again, this is just the first time. And so then we get from rescue, we get to this time of rest, this period of peace. When the judge kind of rescued them and got things straight. And again, you'll see Gideon, you'll see Samson, you're going to see Deborah. You're going to see just some of the different judges that we'll look at and how differently they brought this time of rest. And the outside oppression for retribution, they were different nations each time too. But there was this period of rest, and that's what verse 18 says. Whenever the Lord raised up a judge over Israel, he was with that judge and rescued the people from their enemies throughout the judge's lifetime. So what the judges raised up, saw things, and you're going to see that some of that period of rest was just a few years. Some of that was a number of years. Some of that was decades. But during the life of the judge, there was a time of rest. And it says, to kind of a summary statement, for the Lord took pity. And that Hebrew word is the same word for compassion. For the Lord had compassion on his people who were burdened by the oppression and suffering. So that gives us the full cycle. Rebellion, retribution, rescue, and rest. That's up there. And again, right there, if this was you and me, I'd be like, that's enough. I wouldn't have helped. But that's not the end. It's a spiral. It's a cycle. It continues. And so the next thing is we've got another arrow after that time of rest. Go ahead and click it once. And it brings us right back to rebellion. And verse 19 then goes on to say, but when the judge died, the people returned to their corrupt ways, behaving worse than those who had lived before them. They went after other gods, serving and worshiping them, and they refused to give up their evil practices and stubborn ways. So they're back in this cycle, and again, it goes back around, and then the next judge, God raises up another judge, and his compassion, he raises up another judge, and another judge, and this cycle continues and continues and continues. And so Then there's a little a bit of an epilogue. So that's the spiral. I think we have the next slide for the spiral. Yes, there it is. Rebellion, retribution, rescue, request, rest. Rebellion, retribution, rescue, request, request, rescue, rest. Rebellion, retribution. And it goes on 16 times over the 400 years of the book of Judges. And again, we would say your customer, God does not. God has this... good. You're not the first elder to take a picture of that this morning. All right. So this pattern continues 16 times, which then, again, coming back to when we would say your customer, God doesn't. God sticks with it. God continues with that. So the backstory, and then you have the spiral. And then, honestly, because of time, I'm just going to skip this, but there's a little epilogue. So just click that real quick. The epilogue here is in Judges chapter 2, verses 20 to 23. There we go. And basically, it's just God summarizing this process and saying what happened during the time of Joshua. And you can read those few verses. But because of time's sake, I'm just going to skip. So you can go right to the point there. And that is that what just like God showed his continuous compassion through the judges, God will show his compassion to us every day. And again, understanding, and this is going to come more and more real and more obvious of like, why? Why would these people turn their back on God? And even more so, why would God continue to rescue them? Because God is a God full of continuous compassion. Constant compassion. And that same compassion God offers to us every day. Every day. So I want to talk real quick for the last couple minutes here about the consequences of God's compassion. Like the fact that God shows this compassion, that it's a continuous compassion. What does that mean for us? What are compassion's consequences? What are the results? Whoa, we went too far there. Sorry. Go back to compassion's consequences. I don't know, probably slide. Now go to the beginning of that. Don't look. There should be a... There we go. Okay, cool. Sorry about that. That was my bad pushing you too far. Compassion's consequences. What does it mean? This compassion that God demonstrates to us. What does that look like? What does that mean for us practically every day? Again, God is not going to raise up a judge for you in your time of sin because that was something that was happening with the promise, the covenant that God made with Old Testament Israel. But there are some principles from God's compassion that we can take with us today. There's some consequences, some things, because God is so compassionate, there are things that we can walk away from in this room right now going, that's my God. That is true for me. And so the first thing is that our sin is removed. Our sin is removed, so we don't need to relive it. I don't know if there's supposed to be a hyphen. Is it re-live, relive it? Our sin is removed. God is so compassionate. And the same thing happened for the judges. Their sin, he moved on. Their sin is removed. Our sin is removed through Jesus. It is gone. And how often do we sin? Do we fail? Do we make a mistake? And then knowing that if you have believed that Jesus died for your sins and that you have accepted that, you don't need to relive that sin because it has been removed by Jesus on the cross. It is done. That is God's compassion. And in Psalm 103, the psalm writer writes this way. It says, "The Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in love. He is full of love and compassion and graciousness. He will not always accuse, nor will he harbor his anger forever. He does not treat us as our sins deserve or repay us according to our iniquities," which is just another word for our sin, for that blot on our lives that when we disobey God. He doesn't repay us that way. Who got repaid for our sin was Jesus on the cross. And so, "For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his love for those who fear him. And as far as the east is from the west," give or take a few degrees, "that is how far he has removed," the word there is transgressions, but our sin, our disobedience, our going past what God, our transgressing past what God wants for us. So when we have believed in Jesus, your sin, That one that you just committed this morning. That thought that you just had 20 minutes ago. That action that you took place yesterday. Through Jesus, it is gone. So we don't have to live in it anymore. It has been removed as far as the east is from the west. And if you're not sure how far that is, start on a globe and it just keeps going because it's still east and west, even on a globe, keeps going forever. That is how God's compassion, that is a consequence of God's compassion for us. That is something that we can walk away with today saying, you don't need to relive your sin because God's compassion has removed it. Because God didn't say, you're a customer, I'm done. And more than 16 times, God continuously offers us his compassion. So our sin is removed, so we don't need to relive it. The second thing is, his mercy is new. So each day is a fresh start. Each day is a fresh start. And we don't have to be like, oh, I have to wait till the next time the sun rises. Every moment is a fresh start. So even that time when you sin, 2 seconds later, you can move forward. You don't need to wallow in it. Every day is a fresh start. In Lamentations chapter 3, Jeremiah writes this. He says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. We are not overwhelmed. We are not stuck in our sin. His compassions never fail. He continuously has compassion. They are new every morning. For great is your faithfulness. So God's compassion to us, again, this demonstrated 16 times in the book of Judges, is true for us. And every morning, every moment, it's a fresh start. It's a new start. God is completely faithful. God's mercies never end. His compassions never fail. He never gets to that spot where he's like, I'm done. Sorry, you've hit my limit. I'm done with you. His mercies, his compassions are new every morning. So each day is a fresh start. And the third thing is that we have been freed so we can live for him. And we sang a song about that this morning, the song Forever Changed. Like, we have been freed from our sin. The power of sin doesn't have us anymore. We've been set free. We don't have to continue to sit back and say, oh, it's my sin, this is who I am, I'm stuck. Jesus is like, no, you're free. You're sitting in prison and you're pretending the chains are still there, but if you look, they're not there anymore. You're gone. They're gone. The door is open. Get out. You're free. You're not stuck doing the same sin because, oh, it's just who I am, it's just my sin. No, you have been freed by Jesus. His compassion, he doesn't say, no, that's too much, that's too far, that's too bad, you've done something that's too horrible. His compassion is continuous. And so we have been freed from our sin. Romans chapter 6, Paul writes it this way to the church in Rome. He says, we know that our old sinful selves were crucified with Christ so that sin might lose its power in our lives. When Jesus died on the cross, he took our sin and our sin died with him. We are no longer slaves to sin. For when we died with Christ, we were set free from the power of sin. We're free. We don't need to live in our sin anymore. We don't need to stay held back or stuck by it. We are free to live for him. And each time a judge showed up, they were freed from their oppression from this outside nation. They were set free. And it said that they had a time of rest where they lived in that. But of course, the spiral continued. And we need to break the spiral. Because God's compassion is continuous. And we're not stuck in our sin. We're not slaves. We're not trapped in prison. The door is open. The chains are gone. We are free. And why are we free? Well, Peter says it this way. He says, he personally carried our sins in his body on the cross so that we can be dead to sin. Sin is dead and gone. And live for what is right. And we looked at this passage on Easter Sunday a few months ago. For our unexpected Easter in that series. By his wounds you are healed. See, we have been set free from sin so that we can live for Jesus. So that we can live for what is right. And that is our hope. And so as we go through this series and see how God used Judges. And the Judges is a crazy cool book. Like, I mean, as a middle school boy, that was probably one of my favorite books of the Bible. Frankly, let's be honest. As a middle-aged man. It's one of my favorite books of the Bible. It's just some cool, it's like, just don't miss next week. Like, it's some cool stories. of these amazing things that God has done through the judges. But each time you see this, remember this cycle. Remember the fact that God's compassions never fail. And so when we look at God's compassions here, and my thing just crashed on me, so thank you. When we see that, because of God's compassions, our sin is removed, so we don't need to relive it. We don't need to beat ourselves up over it. And Paul says we don't need to continue in it either. His mercy is new, so each day is a fresh start. Don't get hung up on your mistakes of yesterday or an hour ago. Each day is new. Each moment is new. God is faithful, and His compassion is continuous. And we have been freed from our sin. So let's live for Him. Live for Jesus in everything. We're not stuck. We're not trapped. And that is an amazing truth that we can walk away with. And the point that we'll see all series long is that something. It's the long one. Is that just like God showed His continuous compassion through the judges, God will show His compassion to us every day. Every day. You are not forgotten. You are not too far gone. You are not too horrendous. You haven't done something that's too bad for God to stop loving you. For God to stop demonstrating His compassion. God says, I'm here and I want to help you move forward for me. And my Son, Jesus, took all of that on the cross so that you are free. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for this series and what we have to look forward to of your continuous compassion that over and over and over and over and over, 16 times over, you demonstrate your compassion to your people who completely turn their back on you over and over and over 16 times. And I thank you that that is true for us too. That no matter how many times, how over and over and over and over we sin against you, we turn our back against you, we don't live for you, your compassion never fails. And that your mercy, your compassion is new every morning. And that we have been set free from our sin by Jesus. So thank you for that, God. And I know that this isn't necessarily an application step where we walk away and do something. But I pray that we would walk away this morning knowing that your compassion is continuous. That you never give up on us. And we are so grateful, God, that it's not on our shoulders. It's not on our ability. It's not on our goodness to make it right. Because all of that was done by you through Jesus. And so I pray that we would live for Him in every moment. I pray this because of Jesus' powerful name and what He has done on the cross. Amen.